We begin the current daf, Masechtas Bamitzia, daf Samach Beis. We begin on the bottom line of daf Samach Alef and Beis, where the Gemara continues the discussion in the previous daf. And that is the Gemara was defining the two cases mentioned in our Mishnah when it says Ezeu Neshach Vezu Tarbis. The two different cases the Gemara pointed out was the first case was talking about Ribis Ketzutza, which is pre-arranged Ribis, which is the biblical violation of saying I'm going to lend you this money if you're giving me back more than what I lent you, which is called interest. And then the second case mentioned, which when it says Ezu Tarbis, mentions what's called Avak Ribis, the dust of Ribis, which are only rabbinically prohibited cases of Ribis. Now, on that, there was a Machlekes. Rabbi Elazar said that Ribis Ketzutz, a biblical pre-arranged Ribis, is Yetzi B'dayanin. Could be collected, the courts take back that interest and give it back to the borrower. Whereas Avak Ribis, if it's only rabbinic Ribis, then it's not, the courts do not remove that Ribis from that person. Whereas Rabbi Yechanan said that, no, he says even Ribis Ketzutz is not Yetzi B'dayanin. Even prearranged biblical Ribis is not collected from that person that lent on interest. So on that, Agamar continues and says that Amar Nachmi Yitzchuk, my time at Rabbi Elazar. What is the reason of Rabbi Elazar that he holds that Ribis Ketzutza, that prearranged Ribis, where is his source that you see that the courts will take it back from him and give it back to the borrower? So now the Gemara says, Amar Krav, because it says in the Pasuk, as we continue on top of Samach Bezim and Aleph, which at the beginning of this Pasuk, in this Vayikra, talks about Ribis, as it says, Al Tikach Mi'itoy Neshach Vesarbis, it says in that Pasuk, you shouldn't take from him interest. And it says, "V'yiresem lekecha, you should fear your God." And it says, "V'chei achicha imach," and that your brother should live with you. What does that mean? What that's coming to say is, "Ahadirlei, give the money back to him." This is the source where we see that for biblical ribis, you take the money back from that person, from the lender, and you give it back to your brother, "Kehecha denechi b'hadoch," so that he could live with you. That's what the pasuk is saying at the end. He should live with you, meaning you have to take the interest that you took from him and give it back to him. On that, the Gemara asked Rabbi Yechanan that he says that even Ribis Ketzutza is not returned. We don't take it back from the lender. So, what does he do with that pasuk? What that's coming to teach at the end, that your brother should live with you. He doesn't darshan it like Rabbi Elazar does to say that you should give the money back. So, I think Gemara says, he needs it to teach a different halacha like we learned in the following brisa. Two people going on the road. And one of them had in his hand a flask of water. Says the brisa, Im shaisim shnehem mason. If they both are going to drink from that water, they're both going to die from thirst because there's not enough water for them to drink on their road, on the journey. Vim shaisa echad mehen. If one of them drinks the water, magili yishav, he'll reach the settlement, and over there he'll find water so that he survives. So Darsh Ben Batur had expounded, and he said, Mutav sheyishtu shnehem b'musut. Better that let both of them drink and both of them die, and not let one of them drink and survive and see the death of his friend by not giving him anything to drink. Achabor Rabbi Kiva Liman, until Rabbi Kiva came and he taught that's not the case. It says in the pasuk, "V'chei achicha imach," that you should have your brother live with you. What that means to say is, first is imach, first with you, and then you have to have your brother live with you, which is chayecha koidim l'chayecha vercha, that your life comes before the life of your friend. And therefore, the person takes the flask of water for himself, and he survives, and only then, once he survives and he has more, then he has to help his brother too. But his obligation for his life is first, is primary, and therefore he actually takes the flask of water for himself. That's how Rabbi Yechanan darshans that pasuk, b'chayecha imach, not like Rabbi Elazar, who learns it that you take the money and you give it back, rather a different concept that b'chayecha imach, that the obligation to keep someone else alive is only after you keep yourself alive. So the Gemara continues on this Machlekes Rabbi Yechanan Malaza and asks on the opinion of Rabbi Yechanan that he says that you never give the money back, even Meribis Ketzutza Deraisa, Meisavei. The Gemara asks him the following Braisa. Braisa says, Henich lehem avim mo'ishal ribis. If a father passes away and he left over in his inheritance interest money that he had lent people on interest and he leaves it over for his children. Says the Braisa, even though the children know that their father did something wrong and lent money on interest, they don't have to go ahead and return that money to the borrowers. Now, and as Rashi's Girsa actually is, that there's a deek over here, that in who they ain't chayim al-hachzer, like the Bach brings. Now, they don't have to go ahead and return it to the borrower, and that's because, as the Gemara actually tells us in Baba Kamadav, Kofid Beis and Aleph, because they learn from the pasuk there, where it says in the pasuk of Ribis, it says v'chei achicha imach, which is for the person himself. The Torah warns that he has to have his brother live with him, and that he has to give the money back to him.
which that's what this is, the end of the pasuk of Al Tikach, that you shouldn't take ribis from that person. But what the pasuk is saying is, if you did take, then you have to give it back. But for the children, that was never worn. But says the Gemara, Ha'avin Chayv L'Hachzav, what you see clearly from the Raisa is, but the father, as we said, that the way Rebbe Loza learns the pasuk B'chei Yechichimach, has an obligation to have his brother, who he lent on interest, live with him in that he has to give the money back, which is not like Rebbe Yechanan. He said that you never give the money back. So the Gemara says, no, b'din hu da'avu en namid l'mechayv l'hachzav. The truth is, it's like Rebbe Yechanan, that not only do the children not have an obligation to give the interest money back, but even the father doesn't have an obligation. Because actually the pasuk B'chei Yechichimach does not teach that he has to give the money back, or rather like Rebbe Kiva teaching a different halacha of Chayecha Kaidman. Now, va'aydid de kaboy lemisni seifa, but so why do we say that the children don't have to? Say a bigger chiddush, even the father doesn't have to. You're right, it's just because we kept the symmetry of the b'raisa. Because the end of the b'raisa wanted to say a different case, which is specifically regarding the children. The b'raisa says, hinich lehen avim paru v'talis. If let's say the father died and he left over for his children a cow or a cloak, anything that's distinct, where it's recognizable that this was the thing that his father stole, and whenever people are going to see this by his children, they're going to remember, oh, the father, the ganav, this was someone else's once, but he stole it, and now his children wear it. So all those types of things, says the Braisa, chayovin lahachzor, then the children have to return it to the one that the father stole from, and they covered up him because of the dignity of their father. So it says the Gemara, so Taninama Reisha Biditu. So that's where the Reisha, when it says that there's no obligation, it also spoke about the children. But really the halacha of Ribis is even by the father there's no obligation, like Rabbi Yechanan. It just said with the children, to contrast it with the Sefer, that there is an obligation by the children, not in the case of Ribis, but in the case when the father stole, then they would have an obligation because of Kavod Avim. But really it's not a contradiction to Rabbi Yechanan. Now just the Gemara asks now on this price that we introduced, on the Seifa that we said, which that's why we say in the Reisha symmetrically to keep that, but Vahani, Mimnei Kavod Avim Mimechayvi, so the Gemara asks, what, that when the father was a Goslin and he left over stolen items that he had stolen, so then we say that, okay, because of the dignity of the father, because people are going to say, what do you guys have? That's the car that your father stole from that person that you guys have? So because of the father's dignity, they have to return it to the one that was stolen from. On that asks the Gemara, is there an obligation of honoring their father who's a thief? But Kari Khan, you should apply here the pasuk in Shemais that says, V'nasi ba'amcha leisar, that a prince amongst your people, you're not allowed to curse, which is, in general, a violation of cursing any Jewish person. But the concept is, it's only ba'isa ma'isa amcha. It says ba'amcha, which the Gemara darshans to say that it's when he does the actions of your people. When he's a shemir Torah mitzvahs, when he's a thief, then he violates Jewish law, then there is actually no obligation of his dignity, of not cursing such a person. So therefore, why would the children have an obligation of honoring and to return these davar mesuyim, these distinct objects, when the father was a thief? So that the Gemara answers, because Amr Pinchas Mishmei Derab. It's like Pinchas said the name of Rava in Masechtas Chagiga Daf Chavav Meralev, that, as he explained over there, was Bishas Tshuva, was when he repented, Tshuva, Sachinami Bishas Tshuva, he would talk about, although the father was a thief, but he did tshuva, he repented towards the end of his life, and now that he passed away, he is the Isa Maisa Amcha, and therefore there's an obligation to honor him by returning the stolen objects. Now, the Gemara asks, Iyasa tshuva, but if he did repentance, my boyegabe, what is this stuff doing by him? Actually, regarding monetary law, you're not considered fully repented until you give the object back. So if he repented, how does he have the stolen item still by him? Says the Gemara, Shlihispik lahachza achemes. He was, he repented, he did dvidu, he was doing tshuva, and he just didn't get a chance to return it. He was on his way. That was part of his mission. But he died before he got a chance. So therefore, he did tshuva. And therefore, he's oisa ma'isa amcha. That's why there's an obligation of covet in that situation. So the Gemara continues asking on Rabbi Yechanan, Meisvei from the following b'raisa. The b'raisa says, Hagazlanen, regarding robbers, Umalvi ribis, and those who lend on interest, Afa pishagavu, even though they collected, Machzirin, they have to give it back. So the Gemara wonders, Gazlanen, regarding robbers, my afa pishagavu ikka, how can you even apply the terminology of the braisa that even though they collected, then they have to give it back? Which sounds like, first of all, that there's something that they collected. Moreover, is that if they didn't collect, then they're not allowed to take it. But that's the Gemara's question. I gozel, gozel. If the guy robbed, he robbed. First of all, he didn't collect. And then it would be something that it was already done. And I loy gozel, if he didn't rob, So gazlon and karislu, so you're going to be calling them robbers? How do you apply an obligation of collections with returns regarding a robber? So the Gemara says, Elaim, rather, what do you have to say that to explain this braisa before we get to the question on Rabbi Yochanan? Gazlonin, robbers, mind you, what's that case? Malvi ribis, it's actually one case. The braisa was saying a derogatory term in defining those who lend on interest. Gazlonin, who are the malvi ribis, are those who lend on interest because they're essentially stealing from people their innocent money. That's what the braisa was saying. Afa pishagavu machzirin, even though they collected, they have to give it back. But one thing is that we see from the Braisa, not like Rabbi Yochanan, where we see that those who lend on interest, after they collect it, they do have to give it back. And Rabbi Yochanan says, you never have to give the money back. So says the Gemara, Tanoihi. You're right, Rabbi Yochanan has to say that it's a machlekes Tanoi. The time like Linda Braisa, that the Gemara proves for Rabbi Yochanan that although there are opinions not like him, but there are opinions that are yes like him. The Braisa brings that, in contrast to the Tanakama, Rabbi Nechemiah, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, their patron es ha-malva ves ha-ariv. They exempt the lender and the guarantor, who guarantees the repayment of the borrower. So they're exempt from the negative prohibition and the consequential lashes for being complicit in a loan with interest. The reason being is because they have a positive commandment to rectify the negative prohibition that they violated by being involved in this loan with interest. That's what's called in halacha alav hanitik lasei, a negative prohibition, which generally has lashes, but since it could be corrected with a positive commandment, so therefore there's no lash in that situation for the lender and for the guarantor. Explains the Gemara. My komase, what does Rav Nechemiah and Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov mean when they say that there's a positive commandment to rectify the negative prohibition? Says the Gemara, La meshum daminlu, isn't it because we tell them, Kumu ahaduru, this that you collected, go ahead and give it back. You could fix it. So although there's negative prohibition of al tikach, don't take, but it's saying, but if you did take, then return it, and then v'cheyach yichayimach, that's the pasuk concludes, don't take. But if you did, then you can be menatek laseh by giving it back. So that's the case by the guarantor going to collect back from the borrower, the lender who collected from the guarantor, from the borrower, go ahead and give it back. So mechlal, says the Gemara, the Tanakama Sava, the Labanei Adurin Ninu. So what we could infer from that is, yes, Rav Nechemiah and Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov are like Rav Elazar, where you do have to give it back. But the inference is the Tanakama, the first Tana who is not mentioned over here in the quotations of the Gemara, held that you don't have to give it back. And rather it's like Rabbi Yechanan, and they would interpret Bechei Chicha like the way Rabbi Kiva darshened for regarding different halachas. So you see, it's Machlekes Tanoim. Says the Gemara, like, no. Truthfully, I could tell you that they're both actually not like Rabbi Yochanan. And if it was already collected, the ribbis, everyone would agree that even if, let's say, there would be an obligation to return it, but you cannot, that wouldn't be considered nitik lasei, that wouldn't fix your violation of lending an interest by giving the money back to exempt from the lashes, because that's not fixing it. Now, so then what did Rabbi Nechemiah and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov mean when they said that they're going to be exempt, is talking about when the lender or the guarantor didn't collect yet. Where there, all they did was that they placed the obligation of the ribbis through their conditions in the loan. And that's what from the Chem and Rav Eliezer are coming to say, that when the Torah tells you, Lo yisa simenu lav neshech, you shouldn't place on the loan with an obligation of interest, it's not only regarding the placement of the obligation that the Torah was particular about, but rather it was regarding the placing of the obligation which will ultimately be collected. And as long as it's not collected, that negative prohibition of charging interest could still be rectified with a kum en aseh. Because says the Gemara, my kum aseh, what did they mean when they say that you could rectify it with a positive? It's lekroy ishtara. It's to go ahead and tear the document, not to give back the money. Really, says the Gemara, even if it's not like Rabbi Yochanan, it is like Rabbi Elazar, that you do have to give back the money, but that's not the nitig laseh part. So we could say that actually everyone's not like Rabbi Yochanan, and it's not that this is what they're disagreeing about. So what are they disagreeing about? So that's what the Gemara comes to explain, that Micah Savar, what is it that they hold? If they hold that a document that is available to be collected, halachically, we view it as if it's already collected. The reason being is because the borrower's land and his assets are obligated for the principal and for the interest that's being charged. So then the question is, vo'avdu isirayu. So then the violation was already done, because it's like it's as if it's already collected. So what you're doing when you're tearing up the document is like you're giving the money back. But if it, then the same thing should be technically that if it's collected, then there should be an obligation to return it. And that would sound like Rabbi Yechanan. And or that would be the Nitzik La'aseh. Ve'ilav kegav adami, and if it's not like it's collected, so halah aviv lo klum, then nothing was done. So then the question is, so who is this Tana Kama that would disagree with them and hold that there would be lash in that situation, but nothing was done? So then the Gemara explains, lo'ilim kisavar, shtar ho'im ligvois lav kegav adami. So truthfully, they hold that a document that's ready to be collected, but if it wasn't collected yet, it's not like we view it as if it's already collected. It's not like the person already has it, and if they don't collect, it's like they're giving it back. And the Tana Kama holds that the obligation was, for the violation is just for placing the charge, even without it being collected, of interest. Now, that's what the Tana Kama is teaching us in his Machlekes or in the Chemin of Blaz Ben Yaakov, is the Summa Milsehi. Just placing the obligation of the charge is the violation. And you cannot be menatikid by even tearing the document. So everyone agrees that it's not like you collected. And therefore, it's not like Rabbi Yechanan. But, so what is their Machlekes? Their Machlekes is, when you have this document which is not collected yet, and we don't view it as is collected, can you be menatik at la'aseh, which would then say that you don't get lashes for the violation of charging interest? Everyone agrees that the violation is just the charging, not even the collecting. But then what's the machlekes if the lender or the guarantor will get lashes for their violation in this loan or not? Tana Kama holds that just by doing the charging, by creating that condition in the loan, that already violated, there's no rectification of that. Whereas Reb Nechemya and Reb Elazar ben Yaakov hold that it is the charging, but it's only a charge that will ultimately be collected. And therefore, since if you tear up the document before you collect it, since the shtar o'im ligvus is lav kugavah, then it's not like it's collected, that will be menatigid, that will undo the violation that was done, and therefore they're not going to get lashes. That is their machlekes, and therefore nothing to do with, like, the Gemara wanted to posit for Rabbi Yechanan, and that they're actually disagreeing in this halacha, as if we find someone who says his opinion that there is an obligation to return the money. And that says the Gemara, that's not what they're discussing, whether that was the premise or not. They were discussing a previous stage regarding if that would create a violation of to get lashes for the malva and for the ariv. So the Gemara says actually hachanam mistaber. It's actually logical the way the Gemara just said this, because it's not like we learn the Mishnah Masechtas Ayin Hei Mabeis. The Mishnah says ve'elu oivrim b'leis aseh, meaning the way we just said it, that it's just the charging of the interest, not like the way we wanted to say it for Yechanan, that the violation was the collection, and then the question then was, as if the machlekes was in Rabbi Yechanan's halacha, now do you have to give it back, which then that would go ahead and be the kumaseh and rectify what was done. And that says the Gemara, no, it's mistaber, it's logical the way we're saying it now, not like Rabbi Yechanan, that the violation is regarding just the charging. Because the Mishnah later on tells us, ve'elo oivrim b'leis aseh, these individuals have committed a violation of the negative prohibition of charging an interest. The Hamalva, the lender, Valeva, the borrower, Ha'arab, the guarantor, Va'edim, and the witnesses. Now, explains the Gemara, if you're going to say that, like we had originally assumed for Rabbi Yechanan, to explain that it's a machlekes hanoim in his opinion, that there's no violation until the money is actually collected, that's the violation of Leisasim and Lav Neshech, so Bishle Mekulu Oved Maisa, so we could understand that all the parties did an action which would make them involved and implicit in violating this Isser with the collection of the money. You have the lender who collected from the guarantor, you have the guarantor who collected from the borrower, and you have the borrower who gave the money to the lender, and he violated the Pasuk Dvarim Chav Gimel, Lo Sashach, that he shouldn't pay interest. So those three we understand. But Ela'edem Mai Ovid, but what did the witnesses do? They didn't do any action relating to the collection of the interest. Allah Shema Minah, rather says the Gemara, we could prove like the way we had concluded, this Summa Milsehi, that it's actually just the placing and the charging of the concept of interest on the loan. And therefore, that's like what we said, that the lender and the guarantor, even from the beginning, according to the Tana Kama, are liable because of just the placing and the charging of the interest. Shema Minah, as we said, that was the Chiddush of the Tana Kama. Again, nothing to do with the Machlekes, as we had originally assumed it, to explain it for Rabbi Yechanan, which we thought was that the kumaseh is, do we make you have to give it back, or the Tanakama who held that we don't make you give it back, which would be like a Biyechan, and that we're saying, no, nothing to do with that. We're talking about a previous state, because everyone agrees that the violation is not when you collect it, but it's actually regarding just the charging of the interest itself. So the Gemara continues and gives a general framework, a concept for the obligation of this opinion of Rabbi Elazar, that there, you have to give back the ribbis when it's ribbis ketzutza. The Gemara gives a paradigm of when to know if it's biblical ribbis, which is called ribbis ketzutza, and then they have to give, the lender has to give the money back, or when it's not, and then you don't have to give it back. So Amar Rav Safri says, kol she'ilu bidineihem, anything that, according to the laws of the nations, which they don't have, that it's forbidden to lend on interest, it's okay, it's permitted. So anything that in their laws, meitziyim miloiv lamalva, they would collect, if let's say there's no collateral that the lender is holding on to. So based on the conditions that were made up, so for example, let's say prearranged interest, a guy was a loaner and he said he's lending money but with 5%. So then the courts would go ahead and remove the money if there's no collateral from the borrower's assets to pay up to the lender. Says Rav Safra, b'dineinu, in our law, in Jewish law, if such interest was collected by the lender, machzirin mimalva l'leiva. So then, like we had quoted from Rav Elazar's opinion, that's when we're going to have to take back the money from the lender and give it to get back to the borrower. Which Gemara later on is going to ask from the halacha of avak ribis, which according to their laws, they do collect it from the borrower to give it to the lender. Whereas in our law, since avak ribis is only rabbinic, we don't take it from the lender and give it back to the borrower. Yet according to the way the Rav Safra just set it up, then it would be the same. And the same thing is in the reverse of Rav Safra. Kol she'ilu b'dineim, anything according to their laws, the secular courts, that they would not collect from the borrower to the lender, which later on the Gemara is going to explain what is that case. So b'dineinu, in our Jewish law, if that type of interest was collected from the lender, we wouldn't make the lender give that money back to the borrower. That was the klal that Rav Safra had said. So Amalei Abayi Rav Yosef. So Abayi said to Rav Yosef, uklalahu, is this really an ironclad general rule to follow? But asks Abaya, Bahari Sabisa, you have the case of Sabisa. Sabisa is when somebody lends someone a certain amount of produce. And he says, okay, in a few months he'll give me back that same amount of produce. Says Abaya, Dibidineyim, according to the secular laws, Maitzin mi laiva lamavo. That's a very simple case. A guy lent him a certain amount of produce. The courts will then say, if you borrowed it, so you're going to have to give that same amount of measurement back to the lender. And they'll go ahead and collect from that person. But says Abayu, ubidineinu ein machzirin, but in our law, we will not take back from the lender the excess. Meaning, because the whole reason for this halach of sabasam, that it's forbidden, is because there's a concern. If a person lends a person a certain amount of wheat, which possibly now costs $50, if he's going to give back the same amount of wheat in 3 months from now, at that point in time, it might have gone up to $60. That is ribis, because you're getting back more than what was given. So on that, says Abaya, that halacha is that if it went up the price of wheat in the interim, by the time he gives it back, we do not collect that mimavo l'leiva, because that's avak ribis, that's only rabbinic ribis. It wasn't prearranged interest, it just happened to have gone up in the meantime. So as we said, that avak ribis, even Rabbi Elazar agrees, everyone agrees that you don't collect it from the malva, but that contradicts this general rule that Rav Safra gave. He said that anything in their laws that they would collect from the borrower to the lender, in our law, if the lender collected, we take it back from the lender, give it back to the borrower, but by sub-a-sub, which they do collect from the borrower, we don't take back from the lender. So Amalei, Rabbi Yosef said to Abaya, says, in who, them, the secular courts, when they collect, when there is a situation of sabisa from the borrower to the lender, it's not in the framework of a loan that's charged with interest that they collect from the borrower. Rather, bitoris pikadin asaliyade. They view it as a collection of a deposit that the borrower got from his friend, because his friend gave him a sa, and he's got to give the sa back. It's more like a deposit. But Rav Yisrael is explaining to Abayi, when Rav Safra said his halacha, what he was saying was, anything that in the secular courts that they would collect from the borrower through the framework of interest, in our laws, then we make the lender give it back. But here, it's not, they don't view it, it's not a, it's not a, It's not a ribis halacha that the secular courts collect. It's a bekadin. He gave you a sah, you got to give a sah back. It's basically giving back what he gave you. That's, they don't view it as interest, although the price went up and we view it halachically like interest, but they don't. So therefore, that doesn't fit into the framework of a sah. It's only when they collect, because they say, yes, you could charge an interest, giving back the interest, that's when we say that we would take it back from the lender and give it back to the bar. But the Gemara asks another question on this klal. Amalei Ravinal Ravashi says, but there's a different case that's difficult. Vahari Mishkanta Beloy Nach Yasa. You have the case of when there's collateral that the lender's holding on to, which is not deducted, what he's utilizing of that collateral, from the amount that the borrower is going to have to pay back to him. So, for example, let's say if the lender lends money to a borrower and the collateral is a vineyard. And all in the interim of the loan, the lender who has the collateral is holding on to the vineyard is eating the produce of that vineyard. And moreover, he's not deducting from the debt that the borrower owes him from the vineyard, from the fruits that he's eating of the borrower's vineyard in that whole time period. So essentially, he's eating that fruit in a violation of ribis, because that's interest, because he's getting back the same amount of money plus more all the produce that he's eating. That the bidineyem mitzin milay v'lamalva, so says Ravina, according to the secular courts, they would collect that from the borrower to the lender. In other words, if let's say the borrower who owns the vineyard was eating from his own fruits, which was supposed to be collateral to the lender in the interim, if he was eating from it, the borrower, they would say, no, you're not allowed to. This was the contract that the lender is going to have it. That's his interest. And they would collect it from the borrower to the lender. Whereas, as Ravina, as we continue to Medbeis, according to our Jewish law, we would not take that and collect it back from the lender and give it back to the bar, because that's like we explained before, that's a case of avak ribbis. It's only rabbinic ribbis. Why? Because since sometimes that vineyard will not produce any fruits, because many times the whole crop could just not work out at all, so that's not called ribbis ketsutsa. The biblical ribbis is only when it's prearranged, when it's, you know, you're going to get back more than what was given. Here, although he has the vineyard, he might not get back anything more because it might not produce anything. So that's not biblical ribbis. It's ribbis derabbanan, avak ribbis. So, and we said that by rabbinic ribbis, even Rebbe Laza, everyone agrees, Rebbe Yechon says you never give back. But we're going based on the opinion of Rebbe Laza, who says by ribbis ketsutsi give back, but not by rabbinic ribbis. Now that contradicts Rav Safra's his construct, which was whenever they're going to collect from the borrower to give to the lender, like in this case, the mashkant nechiasa, then we'll collect from the malva, give it back to the leiva, and it's not true, because it's only rabbinic ribbis, and we don't take it back from the malva to the leiva. So Malay, so he answered to Ravin, he says no, similar to like the Gemara's previous answer. Inhu, the secular courts, they think, b'terizvini asa, that this produce that's being eaten has come to liyadayhu, to the hands of the consumer, who is really the lender, that as long as the borrower didn't pay up his money, they view as if the vineyard is sold to the lender as long as time they had made up, which up until then the borrower could go ahead and redeem his vineyard. Now, Rashi actually just points out, the Gemara could have asked from the case of Avak Ribbis of our Mishnah, which that was the case when it says Idru Tarbis, it gave an example of Ribbis Drabanan. It's just that this answer would have been more obvious for over there, where of course it came to the person's hand through a sale. Here we were saying a different case, which is not so obvious, and that we're answering that no, even here, the halacha is that they view it as if it's a sale, and that's why they don't view it as a collection of ribis, of a loan on interest. They view it as this vineyard that he had was really sold to him up until the guy pays up his debt, then he buys it back. And since it's a sale, that's not going to fall into the construct of Rav Safra, since they're not collecting it based on ribbis. When they collect based on ribbis, that's when we say that the lender has to give it back, in Jewish law, from the lender to the bar. So the Gemara asks, so elokol she'ilu b'dinayim d'kamer Rav Safra. So then, this that Rav Safra said, that wherever we find by their law, we have a parallel the opposite way in our law. So my house lashmina says, what is he coming to say? In other words, what is this case that he said that in their law, we're not going to collect from the borrower to give it to the lender, which, although it's ribbis, because that's obviously what we're trying to say, chiddush, that, so therefore, in our law, we're not going to go ahead and collect it from the lender and give it back to the borrower. What is that case that we're comparing their law to our law? So there's the Gemara Hocher Asa Lashmina. What Rav Safra was coming to say was as follows. I'm going to explain the two parallels that he said. First of all, Kol She'ilu B'dineyim Mitzin Milo B'lamalva, he said that whatever in their law they collect for the interest from the borrower to the lender. So we said B'dineyim Achzir Mimalva L'Loibah. So then we would have to, actually, if it was collected by us, the court would take it away from the lender, give it back to the borrower, because we hold Ribis as Asa. Now, Umayni, what is that case? That's B'Ribis Kitzutza Uka Reb Elazar. That's very simple, as we said before. That's by the prearranged Ribis, like Reb Elazar, where they would hold, actually, then you have to pay up. That's regular legal law. You take a loan, and then there's interest. We say it to the exact opposite. If that was collected, that's actually prearranged, and you got to give it back. Now, the second half of the statement was, Kol she'ilu b'dineyem, ein mitzien, wherever in their law that they don't collect from the borrower for that type of interest, b'dineinu ein machzirin, then in our law, we would not collect it if it was, we wouldn't take it back, if it was collected to give it back from the lender to the borrower. What's that case? That's ribis mukdemis, that's advanced ribis, in other words, where the borrower gives a gift to the lender before the loan was even taken, and ribis mucheris, which is the opposite, which is delayed ribis, which is that after the loan was already paid up, then the borrower goes and gives a gift to the lender, which the Gemara explains this later on at the end of the parak of Ayin Hei Amud Beis. Now, there, the borrower is giving those gifts to the lender in the framework of ribis, because it's really, he wants to give him more than what he gave him, which is the interest, where in our law, if it wasn't given, they're actually not going to collect it from the bar, because they never made up with that beforehand. They were never made up. It was just a loan on document, and he paid up the loan. The fact that he gave a gift, or he says he wants to give a gift, or he gives a gift afterwards, that in their law is not a problem, and they're not going to collect it from the borrower. But in our law, it's forbidden, but it's ribis derabanan. And in our halacha of ribis derabanan, if it was collected by the lender, this gift of ribis mukdemis, ribis mucheres, we would not take it back from the lender to the borrower. That's the parallel that Rav Safra's halacha is teaching us. When they don't collect from the borrower, we don't take it back from the lender, give it back to the borrower. Now the Gemara goes back to explain the halacha of the Mishnah that said, Ketzad, what is this case of tarbis? Which we said that the biblical tarbis is really the same as the biblical neshech. It's just saying that there's two negative prohibitions for ribis. But then what the Mishnah does give is a rabbinic case of ribis, a case of avak ribis. What is that case? Says the Mishnah, Lokachemenu chitim bediner zav hakor. If he took from him wheat in the amount of a kor for a diner zav, which is the worth of 25 silver dinar, and the chin ashar, and that was the going rate at that time in the marketplace, v'chulu, and etc. Now, a simple reading of this case of the Mishnah, as we said, that it's talking about a rabbinic case of ribis, is because it's talking about mekech memker. It's talking about business dealing instead of a loan, which is only rabbinic type. Now, the way it's read is that if somebody purchased wheat from somebody for 25 silver dinar, which was the going rate at that time, then it's what was called pisuk ala peiros. He didn't get the delivery of the peiros right away. It was going to be delivered throughout the 12 months, throughout the year. But before the wheat was delivered, so then the price of wheat went up, and it went up to a price of 30 dinar. So the consumer said to the one who he bought from, he said, look, give me my wheat, because now I'm very excited. Now actually what I bought from you, I got a cheaper price. I bought at that time, the market was 25. Now by the time you're delivering, it's worth 30 dinar. I want to sell it so that I could buy wine with it. So on that, the seller tells him, he says, look, you know, you don't want my wheat now. You really want it to just get wine. So you know what I'll do for you? The wheat that I owe you, I'll consider it as if you have 30 dinar worth of wheat by me, and I'll transfer it to wine, and I owe you wine worth of 30 dinar. Now, the problem is that he doesn't have wine at that time, and although that there is a market value of wine that's already established at the time, but he's going to end up giving him wine at a future point in time. That's what the Mishnah says, so that's asr. So that type of transaction is asr. That's what's considered a ribis dirabanan, what's called a vavak ribis. On this case, the Gemara has the following question. V'chi ein lo yayin mai hava. What is the problem in this case that the original seller doesn't have wine to give him? Because, as we explained, since it's talking about that it was what's called yotza hashar, the price has already been established for wine at that point, for that season. And this seller is obligated to give to his buyer, who already paid him a long time ago, He has to give him either the wheat that he owes him or money that he owes him. So now that he's saying, okay, you know what? You don't really want the wheat. You just want it so that you could have to be able to buy wine with that. So he says, I'll give you wine instead for that 30. So essentially, it's what's called in this halacha of paisik a la peiris, where he's saying, okay, I owe you 30. So it's like you're giving me 30 dinar, and I'll end up delivering to you at a later point in time that 30 dinar worth of wine. So what is wrong with that? Why does the Mishnah consider that as, because he doesn't have wine right now, that as if that's going to be a problem, but it's already yatsa shar. So as the Gemara explains, Va'atanya, which is really actually, it's a Mishnah later on, the Mishnah says, ain't paiskin ala peiris. It's problematic to do this operation that somebody should pay a certain amount of money for, let's say, a kur of wheat. And he tells him, look, you know, you don't have to give it to me right now. I'm paying you for the year. And I want you to give me later on in the year that wheat. That's problematic because maybe by the time he's going to deliver the wheat to him at a later point in time, it's going to, the price of wheat has already gone up, but the guy already had the money. So the money that he had was essentially like a loan, and he got to use it, and he's going to be giving him back more than the money that he got. So that's a problem of rabbinic ribbis. Now, moreover, is even if, let's say at that point in time when he got the money, there were some people that already, it was in the beginning of the reaping season, that already were selling wheat, but that's not the shahr yet. That's not, it's not, the market didn't yet ground itself yet to establish what is the going rate. So you can't do pisik ala peiris at that point in time to do that where someone could pay and then you're going to deliver in 3 months from then. Says the Mishnah, atshe yatsa hashar, until it's already established and it's well known how much is the going rate in the marketplaces for produce at that time, at that point in time. And then you're allowed to go ahead and have that deal. And yatsa hashar, paiskin. So if the marketplace has already been established, then you could go ahead and do this pisuk where the guy could pay you and you'll only deliver at a later point in time. And Afa says the Mishnah, Afa Pisha ain't lazeh, because even though the meicher, the seller, doesn't have produce, which that's a different halacha. There's two permissibilities for this halacha of pisuk ala peiris. Again, as we explained, it's a rabbinic prohibition of ribbis of pisuk ala peiris, similar to the case of sa basa. By the time you're going to give to him what he paid for, it might have gone up in price, and you got to use the money all in that time, which is essentially like a case of ribbis. But there's two exemptions. If, let's say, what's called yeshloi, the guy has produce at that time, even though he doesn't give it to him, but it's, since it's there, it's like the buyer already has it, it's just by the seller's domain. So even if it goes up in price, it's not like the seller is giving him more, it's the buyer's stuff that went up. Or, as the Gemara is pointing out from the Mishnah over there, tells us, Avabisha ain lazeh, even if the seller doesn't have his own wine or produce or whatever it is that they made the pisuk on, yesh lazeh, somebody else has. And it's very easily purchased at that point in time with the money that the seller's getting because everyone's selling at that time and the market value has already been established. So therefore, the Gemara's question is as follows. What's wrong with this case in the Mishnah that they're calling it Ribbis Rabbanan? We described the case. We said that one person bought from somebody a certain amount of wheat. He didn't deliver it right away. By the time he's going to deliver it, the price went up, which is not problematic because the guy had wheat at that time or the shahr was yatsa. Fine. Then he says, I want to get my wheat for 30 dinar, which he would be allowed to give him. But he says, no, you don't want the wheat. You really want it for wine. I'll give you wine, but I just don't have wine right now. Okay. And that's a problem because of pisuk. But it's not a problem because it was already yatsa shahr. The market value has already been established. And therefore, the money that the seller owes the borrower, he could take that money and buy wine elsewhere. So even if the market value goes up, it's as if it's yeshle, and as if the bar already has that produce, because it's so easily accessible. So that's permitted, as we just brought from the Mishnah later on, the Ayin Beis. So why does our Mishnah say that that's a case that's forbidden because he doesn't have wine? Who cares? Yotza Shah. So Amar Rabbi, Rabbi explains, Masnitin bebalocha b'dimei maskinan. Our Mishnah is different, as we see in the case, because in this case, where the seller is not giving to the consumer in this case, he's not paying him the value of the wheat that he owes him, that then the buyer is giving him back money that he could use for the wine. Rather, what he's coming to do, he's coming to transfer the debt that he owes him for the wheat that he was supposed to provide for him, and he's saying, okay, that I owe you for the wheat, let's transfer that onto an obligation that I owe you of wine. And he's telling him, look, I'll accept upon myself the wheat that I owe you of 30 dinar, like the market value is up right now, that could have sold. So right now by me, let's transfer that to a debt that I owe you of the wine of the market like value that it is right now. And had he had wine, so he could have bought it right now. And if it would go up in value, meaning the buyer could have done that, then it would have gone up in his domain. Now the problem is, as the Mishnah tells us, that the seller doesn't have wine. And moreover, is that he didn't receive money right now. This is the fundamental difference regarding that Mishnah over there and regarding the case we're describing in our Mishnah. In our case, the seller didn't get any money that he could then say, oh, that I can go ahead and buy it anywhere, which is the concept of Yatsa Hashar. So it comes out that essentially, really, it's just like a regular loan that he has where he owes the guy money. So that's the critical difference, where if the guy was paying right now, and it's Yatsa Hashar, so okay, the money that you're giving me right now, although I don't have the produce, I don't have the wine, but it's like Yeshle, because I could easily go get it with the money that you gave me. So therefore, it's like the Lekeach already has it, just like when Yeshle, when the seller has it, it's considered as if the bar already has it. Here also, when it's Yatsa Hashar, it's already like he has it, but in our case, it's not the case. The money that he gave him from the wheat was years ago. He already used up all that money. Now, it's a debt that's being transferred on wine that he's going to give him at a later point in time. He doesn't have that het of Yatsa Hashar. The whole het of Yatsa Hashar is that he couldn't go ahead and buy it now. But he can't buy it now. So he can't view the wine as if it's in the domain of the buyer. And therefore, that is going to be a problem of this ribbis. As the Gemara says, Gittanya, like we learned the Braisa, that there is a difference between if the buyer is giving him money now, or when it's what's called Baal of Becheva, when it's just saying, okay, wait, this outstanding debt that you owe me, to transfer it onto something else, that would be a problem of doing it with Pisuk ala Paris, or what we're calling in our case, Pisuk ala Yain. Because the Braisa says, if someone was collecting debt by his friend, that he owes him a mana. And he goes and he stands up by his threshing house. And he says, Tenli ma'isai, give me my money. You know, you owe me mana. Shani writes, I want to use that money to buy wheat. So the guy, the debtor, tells him, look, don't worry, I owe you money. I have wheat that I will give to you. Go ahead and let's write up a contract that I owe you the amount of money and that amount of wheat that the value of the wheat is right now. And I'll go ahead and I'll provide for you wheat for the next year, for the next 12 months, even if the value of wheat will go up at that point in time, I accept upon myself that increase in price for the value that I owe you right now, which essentially that's the halacha of Pisuk al Peiros, where a guy is paying now for getting future deliveries. Says the Brais Asr, that's Asr, that's going to be the same as halacha of Mishnah, again, which we're differentiating from the Mishnah Daf Ayin Beis. Why? Says the Gemara, because the lav ki isari habala yadidami. It's not like when he gets an isur of money right now, where at the time that they're making up the contract for the later delivery, because then when the guy gets the money, then you could say, okay, he could go to the market right now with the money that he got and he could buy. So it's like a yeshlai, which then we even consider not only that yeshlai that the meicher has it, but as if the bar already has it. But here where he's not getting money, it's just a transfer of a debt. That's why we said bala b'chayvai does not consider it as if the seller has it, and if not, if it's going to go up, if the seller doesn't have it, we can't view it as the buyer has it, and therefore by the time he gives him, it's going to be more increase of value than what he owed him. That's going to be a ribbis, the rabbanon of avak ribbis, and that's why the halacha of our Mishnah said that it's going to be forbidden. That was the interpretation of Rabba in our Mishnah. Amalei Abaye. Abaye, however, asked on Rabba. Although the conclusion will be similar, Abaye asked from the source of Rabba. Says, if you're saying that when it's a transfer of a debt, it's not like money that's being gotten right now, and therefore you don't have the heter of Yatsa Hashar, that's the reason why it's Asr in our Mishnah, since he doesn't have wine, even though it's Yatsa Hashar, it's not going to work. So my ear ye ain't loy. But in that as Abaye, then why does the Mishnah have to tell us that the seller who wants to transfer from the wheat that he owes the guy, which went up from 25 dinar to 30 dinar, and he wants to transfer the wine, that we said it's Asr because he doesn't have wine, and Yatsa Hashar is not going to work, asks Abaye and Rabba, Afila Yeshle Nami, even if the seller had wine, it should still be forbidden. Why? Because the Tana you just quoted was that the creditor was standing on the threshing house of the debtor, meaning that the debtor had wheat. And still we said that it's usur when you transfer it. But why? Why is it? Meaning to the week that he's going to pay him for the whole year. Why is that usur? If he has, that we see that Yatza Hashar doesn't work whenever you are Baal of Bechayva, even if you have that produce. So then ask Sabaya, why did you say, if that's your source of Yahalocha to differentiate from that Braisa, to explain the Mishnah that it's Yatza Hashar is not going to work, because meaning Pisuk is Usr when you're just when you're not giving actual money. Actual money works for Yatza Hashar because you have the money, you can go ahead and buy it. Yatza Hashar doesn't help if you're not getting money right now, which is Baal of Bechayva. But additionally, as Abaya, then that would even be usur, even if he has the produce at that time, which he's going to provide later on, because that is what it sounds like from the brisa that they hold is always usur in that situation. But then why did the Mishnah say, according to your interpretation, based on this brisa, say that he doesn't have the wine, even if he had the wine, there should be usur? See, Elam Abaya, rather Abaya gives a different interpretation. It says Masnit in our Mishnah is Kedetani Rav Safra. How Rav Safra had taught in the halachas of ribis in the yeshiva of Rav Chiya, where it's not talking about like Rabba said that he had with this halacha of pisuk ala pay, as if they made up originally for a certain amount of wheat and that he's going to deliver at a later point in time. No, it's talking about a whole different halacha. Says Abaya, the Tanya Rav Safra beribis to Rav Chiya. Rav Safra had taught in the halachas of ribis in the yeshiva of Rav Chiya that yesh dvarim shehim mutarim, the art certain things that are intrinsically, halachically permitted, but vasurim neharam es ribis, but they're forbidden, these transactions, because of the appearance, the trickery of interest. Because essentially you really is a it's a roundabout of really getting interest, although really it's not, but because of that it's gonna be forbidden. So Ketza, what's such a case? So says Rav Safra, Amalai Helveni Mana. Somebody tells to a potential lender, lend me a mana. Amalei says to him, look, mana emli, I don't have a mana. Chitin b'mana yeshli, but I have wheat in the amount of a mana. Shani noizlach, that I'll give you, that I'll lend to you, according to the value of the market right now, that it's worth a mana. So, noslin chitin b'mana, so he gives him wheat in the worth of a mana. Now, problem is, what's he going to do with that wheat? He doesn't want wheat. Okay, now he has capital. I mean, he has a product, he can use that to sell, but he needs to get cash. So, because of a lochin heimenu be'esim arbasali. So, what the lender does is he buys back from the borrower the wheat, which is worth 25 sela. That's how much a mon is worth. He buys it back from him for 24 sela, meaning a sela cheaper than how much the wheat is worth. Now, the borrower is doing this because he's pressed for money and he can't wait for the marketplace day to have to sell it and get 25 slum for it. He sells it now back to the lender for 24 slum. Says Rav Safra, mutter. That essentially is really permitted because there's no interest charge over here for the delay of money, which is what interest is. He gave him something worth a mana, and he's going to give him back exactly a mana. Now, but v'asalasis came the haromas ribis, but that's forbidden to do because it has the appearance of ribis, because what's happening is really he's only lending him 24 slum, because he's giving him money of 24 slum. He gave him the week worth 25 and he's getting back 25, but he right away bought it back for 24. So he's really, the guy's only ending up with 24 of cash and he's going to pay him back 25. So therefore that's forbidden. That's the halacha of Rav Safra. Says Abaye Hachinami, same thing applies to the halacha of our Mishnah. Kegoin da'amr halveini shleishim dinarim. The case of our Mishnah is a whole different reading than we had up until now. The case is talking about not like a sale as we had been reading it, not the way Rabbi had interpreted that it's based on the problems you run into, is this halacha pisuk al ha-peiris. Different halacha. It's actually talking about a real loan. It's talking about where someone tells someone else, halveini shleishim dinarim, lend me 30 dinarim. Amalei says to him, look, shleishim dinarim ainli, I don't have 30 dinarim. Chitin b'shleishim dinarim yeshli, but I have wheat the worth of 30 dinarim. Shani nesloch, that I'll give you. So he gives him wheat worth of 30 dinar. Now, the same thing as in that brisa, which Abai is comparing is the halacha of our Mishnah, because of halacha me'emenu b'dinar zav. As we learned these words in the Mishnah, one could go ahead and compare and contrast how these words, how this concept of Abai fits into the words of the Mishnah. Now, the lender goes and buys back from the borrower the wheat for a dinar zav. He gives him a golden dinar, which is 25 silver dinar. So our mission essentially, when it was said the words lokechemenu chitim, is very different now. Lokechemenu chitim was the lender buying the wheat back from the borrower who he lent that wheat to. Now, but when he's coming to collect that loan that he gave to the borrower, the lender is going to tell him, give me my money that you owe me, that I could go ahead, says the lender to the borrower, that I could go ahead and buy wine with that. And that the borrower says to the lender, the money or the wheat that I owe you, that you gave me for 30 dinars, that I'm going to transfer that onto wine because that's what you really want it for. But he doesn't have wine. That's what the Mishnah was saying, that that's the case, that it's aser. Now, why is that? So, and that explains Abaya. If the lender who wanted his money back, which he had lent 30 dinars worth of wheat, and he wants that back so he could buy wine, the way we understand the halacha of the Mishnah is, if the borrower had wine, the yovle b'shleishim dinar that he would be giving and paying him back for the 30 dinar worth of wheat that he gave him, he gives him 30 dinar worth of wine back. So peruhu d'kushakulane. So what the lender is going to be collecting from the borrower is produce. He's going to be taking wine. So on that, says Abaya, that v'leslamba. That wouldn't be, we wouldn't have any problem with that. The reason being for that is because originally he gave him peris, he gave him 30 dinars worth of wheat, and he's collecting from him peris, taking back from him 30 dinars of wine. That wouldn't have any similarities to ribbis to be considered haramis ribbis, because it looks like it's like you're taking back exactly what you gave. But the problem is, and that's what the halacha, the Mishnah is coming to say, is, but if he collects from him back from him money, because he doesn't have wine, again, nothing to do because if there's no wine, then it's not Yotz Ashar, a very different case Abai is describing. But rather, if he doesn't have any wine, he's going to be paying back with money. That's going to be a problem. Because, as we explained, although he really gave him 30 dinars, he really gave him only 25. Because, as we said, since the guy really was desperate, he right away sold it back to him for a dinar zav. And so it's like he lent him 25. If he's going to be paying back with money, so that's going to have a real appearance of ribbis. So therefore, says the Gemara, v'ilai, if he doesn't have wine, kiven de lesley chamra, since he doesn't have wine, vade mishkol zuzim, he's definitely going to collect money from him, and that's mechzik ribbis. That has the appearance of ribbis. That falls into the category of rasafra. That's the understanding of the halacha of our Mishnah. Why, if he doesn't have wine, because it's a whole different case, it's about a loan of food, which were then quickly bought back, which although intrinsically it's permitted, but there's the appearance of ribbis, and that's how Abai explains Halacha LeMishnah. When does it have appearance of ribbis? Is only if he's going to collect back from him money. Because since he gave him, on some level, money, which was 25 from that 30, and he's taking back 30, so that looks like ribbis. But if he gave him wheat, 30, and he's taking back wine, 30, that doesn't have the appearance of ribbis. That was Abai's interpretation. Amalei Rabba. Now, Abaya had asked on Rabba, now Rabba asked on Abaya. He says, Ehachi, if that's the case, there's many, many errors in the reading according to Abaya's interpretation of the Mishnah. Ten lichite, the words that the Mishnah says is that he tells him, give me my wheat, or the one who's the claimant, who, the way we originally read it, was the buyer, the way at least the way Rabba had said it, it's the buyer who had paid for the wheat, wants to get his wheat back, which was a commerce type of a transaction. Abayas is a whole different case. He's not talking about a business deal. It was a loan of wheat, which he then bought back from him. So, on that as Rava Tabaya, ten lichite, what's the lender who had lent the wheat, saying, give me my wheat, demechi to me by lish, saying the value of my wheat, because the way Abaya described the case, the lender had already bought it back right away, the wheat, and he gave him money for that. But he still owes him the money of the wheat. Why is he saying, give me my wheat? It's just saying, give me the money of my wheat. So it says Abai Tanei, you should read it. Demechita, yeah, it means the money of my wheat. But Rava still asks. He says, if it's talking about that the lender is claiming money, so what's this that the words that he says, Shani, that I want to be Meichon, that I want to sell them, that's the reading of how the Mishnah says, give me my wheat because it went up in price, or and I want to be able to sell them to buy wine. You should say that I've sold to you already, meaning that there was a transaction between them already with the wheat, but not that it should be sold now. So Tanei Sabai says, read this, that I've sold to you, that it was already done already in the past, not that he wants to sell it now. But Rabbi continues to ask, Harei chitecha asuyis alai b'shloishim dinar. The words in the Mishnah were that your wheat is transferred now onto 30 dinar. That as Rava, what do you mean? That's what it was originally. Originally was that he had lent him the value of wheat of 30 dinarim. It's not now that it's being considered as 30. You know, the way we read it, let's say, according to Rabbah, it was originally 25, it went up to 30. So now he's considering it as the 30. In Abaye's case, it was already in the beginning valued at 30. So that answers the Gemara. This is what the borrower is telling to the lender. In the value of the wheat which you made upon me originally at a value of 30 dinar, so I know I owe you that amount of wheat. Let it be considered for me that I owe you that amount of wine. But he doesn't have wine, and that will still resolve the interpretation of Abaye. But Rava asks one final question. He says, but v'habedinner zav hakur. But the words of the Mishnah are that the kur of wheat was 25 dinarim. V'chein hashar, and so too that's the going rate. In the marketplace, Katani, that's what the Mishnah teaches. So essentially what Rav is asking is, according to you, Abaye, when it was bought from the lender back from the 30 dinar worth of wheat that he gave to the borrower, and he bought it back for a dinar zav, the shahr actually was not 25, it was 30. It was just that the borrower was desperate, so he's selling it cheaper to the lender. Because as Rashi points out, if actually the shahr was a dinar zav, and it's just that the lender made it considered that he's lending him 30 dinarim worth, well, that would be already ribbis because of the delay of the money, which is a classic case of ribbis. The Mishnah is obviously describing a different case where it's not the biblical ribbis. So says Rava on Abaye, besides all those other questions that Abaye answered, okay, so read it like this, read it like this, read it like this. He said, what are you going to do with this part of the Mishnah, which says that the shahr was a dinar zav? But according to the way that Abaye is describing the case, it's not that the shah was a dinar zav. The shah was 30, and that's how much wheat he gave him. He just bought it back from him for 25, and therefore, according to Abaye, it's not readable the way he's describing the Mishnah. And therefore, the Rabbah will continue on to the next daf, his own interpretation, which will explain the halacha of our Mishnah.